This is a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.
This week, we're learning about the Royal Society Young People's Book Prize 2020. A shortlist of six books, some of the best young people's science books of the year. It's been decided by a whole load of absolute geniuses, and one of those is Professor Mike Kendall. He is a geophysicist, he is a fellow of the Royal Society, and he's on the line with us now. Hey, Mike.
Hi, Dan. How are you?
Yeah, very well. Thank you so much for joining us. Now, I'm looking at the names of some of these books, and I know because I've spoken to a few people for the show, people like Professor Barry Marshall, he's in there with How to Win a Nobel Prize. Talk to us very quickly about your role as a scientist in trying to decide just some of the best science books for young people of the year.
Yeah, it's been a very interesting procedure. I mean, obviously, we're trying to decide from a really broad selection of books that I really have to emphasize are generally really, really good. So it's a difficult task. It's also difficult because we're adults trying to decide what younger kids would really like to read. But the idea is to take it down to a short list, and then we meet as a group and decide on which one is a bit different, maybe presented in a way that hasn't, you know, it's a bit unconventional. We're really interested in books that might attract a much broader range of kids' interest, you know, to get interested in science.
So how many science books were you presented with at the point? And then you've whittled it down to six. And then I know that a lot of kids all around the country are going to decide the best ones. So how many were you presented with?
Well, I started with, I think it was 104, something on that order. And we had to get down to a long, long list, which was down to about 50. And then each judge was then told to shortlist their 12 best, the ones they thought would be the favorites. And then when we got together, we had to distill that down to a final six. And it was quite an interesting procedure because you'd think, well, there'd be some commonality in the 12 that we picked or we chose, but there wasn't. There was often disagreements, and it was really fun just to sort of argue about, well, this book's better for this reason and this one's better for this reason. So it was a very really enjoyable experience. And because the quality of the books was so good and there's so many of them, it was quite challenging, but we're happy with the six that we reduced it to.
How much have you noticed when you had those initial 100 or so books, some similarities and some themes with the general topics? Do these things tend to come about in waves at the moment? Quite rightly, everyone's quite focused on the climate. And I see a book here in the shortlist. It's about the wonderful world of your microbiome. I've heard quite a lot about a microbiome this year. Do you tend to notice these ideas popping up quite often, Mike?
Yeah, there's definitely trends. And so there was a lot this year on plastics. And you're right, there's been an increase in books about climate and stuff. Books about space are very popular, especially with as big space missions come into fruition. So it can vary quite a bit. It doesn't necessarily mean, though, because the book's topical, doesn't mean it's well written or going to be necessarily chosen.
Now, if it's all right with you, there are six books. Can we just run through them and you give us like a little short, very short summary and a blurb of each one?
Yeah, okay.
So the first one, this is by Katie Brosnan. It's Gut Garden, A Journey into the Wonderful World of Your Microbiome.
Yeah, now this is a fascinating book. It talks about microbiomes, and viruses are in that category. And, as we all know right now, viruses are very important and can be actually beneficial, but they can also be very harmful. And I think what's interesting about this book, it really shows how the complexity and how complicated this world of biomes, microbiomes are. And in fact, in the book, it points out there's more sort of microbiomes and viruses in your body than there are cells, and by orders of magnitude. And I think what's interesting about this book is the type of book that probably couldn't have been written 10, 20 years ago, because our knowledge of this subject is moving so quickly. And as you pointed out, it's something that we're hearing more and more about, you know, how these are so important for digestion and healing ourselves and how we operate day to day.
It's amazing, isn't it, how we're always finding out new things, especially about digestion. You would have thought that might have been something that we locked down ages ago. But I remember from yoga adverts on the telly, and they would talk about how they've got all this good bacteria in there, and now we're learning actually maybe that's not the case, and it's this microbiome that you need to think about. All of that just amazes me that we keep learning these things.
Yeah, this book even speculates, you know, looks at recent research that says what your appendix might be doing and why, you know, because we always thought that wasn't really a useful organ, but it may in fact play some sort of role.
It turns out it's useful after all. Right, the next book is by Libby Deutsch, illustrated by Valpuri Kittilä. It's The Everyday Journeys of Ordinary Things. The title is really hooking me in for this one, Mike. Tell us more.
Yeah, I love these type of books. I mean, as a kid and even now as an adult, I love watching a TV show that shows you how something's made, you know, something you might use day to day, you know, like you might get a carton of milk out of the fridge and just going back to, you know, the journey from a cow, you know, feeding on grass to your fridge is quite fascinating. And it talks about all sorts of things like that, you know, how the internet works, how GPS, you know, how you know where you are with your phone or your watch. How mail is distributed, you know, how, you know, the whole process. And I think it's really important because it shows people really, you know, the implications, what has to happen for you to turn on that light switch or to get a piece of fruit out of the fruit bowl. And so it just, it tracks the journey and shows actually really how amazing it is that many of these things work as efficiently and as well as they do.
And if you thought that name hooked me in, the name of the next one, Cats React to Science Facts. It's by Izzy Howell. Is it what it says on the tin?
It is. This was an interesting book. This is a book we discussed a lot as judges of all, because it was a book, if you'd have told me shortlisted when I first saw them, I was like, no, never. I mean, it's just pictures of cats reacting to interesting facts. But actually, it's really good. It has lots of good, not only just interesting facts, but tries to explain to you a little bit about how things work, how the natural world works. And the cats just are, you know, there for amusement. And in the end, we agreed. So one of the other judges, she has younger children, and it was their favorite book, for example. They just loved you know, reading and learning, using it. And then in the end, we thought, well, if, you know, some of these books are great, but they're only going to appeal to young children, kids, young adults who are interested in science already. And we wanted some books that might hook people in that maybe were a bit intimidated by science or maybe not that interested in it. And I think this book does a great job of that. It makes lots of stuff, you know, about science and the natural world very, very interesting and accessible.
Now, we spoke earlier on about how trends are quite important with books. The next one is In the Key of Code. It's by Amy Lucido. Is that coding computer coding? Is it biological coding? Tell us more, Mike.
It's computer coding. So this is one of the, we tried to pick a selection of books of different styles and types, and this one is a novel. So it tells a story, and it's a very nice story. It's about a young girl who moves and starts a new school, and she's into music and really has no interest in coding or, you know, computer coding. But sort of almost accidentally gets into this and makes a friend along the way, and, you know, has a really good teacher. And initially I sort of dismissed it as, you know, it's a nice book, it's interesting. But then actually, as you read into the book and it goes on and on, it actually shows you the structure of coding and how it's sort of a very logical, or what we'd say, algorithmic. And we felt this was a really good book because it showed, you know, even if you're intimidated by it, it's not that bad. And we were hoping that it would encourage people that maybe felt, well, coding computers not really for me, that actually, you know, it can be fun, and it weaves, you know, aspects of coding in with music, and it's just a really nice story and very cleverly done.
Now, more about the titles of these things. The next one is by Professor Barry Marshall. He's been on the show. He's a favourite of ours with Lorna Hendry as well, illustrated by Bernard Kaleo. And the title, it's hooked me in mainly because I know that a Nobel Prize is worth something like £1 million, I think. It's How to Win a Nobel Prize. Tell us about this one, Mike.
Yeah, so again, this is a book that's a bit of a story, and I must admit it initially I thought, well, it'll be interesting, but I don't think it'd be that good. And actually, as I read it, it's brilliant. And actually, my whole family read it, and it was our number one choice of my household. And it just basically is what I like about it is it shows that there isn't a tried and proven route to getting a Nobel Prize. Sometimes these things come around. Not so much accidentally, but you make discoveries you weren't looking for, and it just shows you the what, you know, for me as a scientist, the real pleasure is you explore things because you're interested in them. Sometimes things work out in ways you didn't really expect, and it really describes that nicely. And it's basically a young girl. She meets all these, you know, now dead Nobel Prize winners because she can travel in time and stuff. The other thing that's interesting about the book is the end of each chapter, a section, there's a little experiment that you can do. And one of the ones I really loved was just how you can melt chocolate in a microwave. And based on how that works, you can estimate what the speed of light is. And, you know, lots of interesting things like that. So you're reading about these people's lives. You're also learning a lot about the actual physics or science behind their prizes. It was really good.
Now, the last one on the shortlist, it's got me very interested because of the title. But if you think in 2020, we've been stuck at home for quite a lot of it. No one's really been rushed to do anything unless you're trying to make a vaccine. You know, people have been pretty chilled out this year. The book is Astrophysics for Young People in a Hurry. It's by Neil deGrasse Tyson, who is a world famous scientist with Geoffrey Moen as well. Tell us about this one, Mike.
Yeah, this is another really good one, and it's quite different from the other ones that we've talked about. It really tells you, it's like an introduction to astrophysics, but it is more than that. And actually, yeah, it doesn't, you know, the title being for young people in a hurry is a bit misleading because it's, you know, you should take your time and savor it. But it's just so well written and so well presented. I was saying to somebody recently, I just love the first sentence in the book. Is it says, in the beginning, nearly 14 billion years ago, the entire universe was smaller than the period that ends this sentence. So smaller than the full stop at the end of that sentence. It's quite staggering facts. But he has little digressions, which I love, you know, asides about, you know, the Earth isn't exactly round, it's an oblate spheroid, it's slightly flattened, things about gravity and just sort of how astrophysics is, you know, this juncture between what Newton thought and then what Einstein's think, you know, discoveries. And it's just really, really well laid out. Really, I've heard Neil deGrasse Tyson speak at conferences before, and he's a really good communicator. It's a really good book.
So those are the six on the short list. You've been in charge with other people of putting these together, but you're not going to decide the best book, science book for young people of the year. How will that get figured out, Mike?
So what the Royal Society does, and I should, you know, should, I think the fact that the Royal Society runs this competition is excellent. It's really a great thing. They will send thousands of these books to children of the ages that they're intended, you know, between 8 and 14. And then because there's six quite different books in format, size, style, the idea is that the children will vote, or the young adults will vote on which one they think is the best. And so it will be by democracy, if you like. And that recognizes the fact that maybe, you know, six adults aren't the best people to judge which one is actually the best one.
Well, it's nice that you can say that, Mike. Listen, brilliant work. I mean, they all sound fantastic. I'm very excited to figure out who readers declare is the best book. Professor Mike Kendall, geophysicist, and fellow of the Royal Society, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
No problem. Thank you.
That was an interview from the Fun Kids Science Weekly podcast. There's a new episode every week. Find it wherever you're listening to this, or ask your smart speaker to play the Fun Kids Science Weekly podcast.
So that was a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.